Athletes, stake your mark, get set. It's time for the Addict to Athlete podcast. Everybody out there, Coach Blue Robinson here. Thank you so much for downloading, sharing, subscribing to the podcast. We appreciate you jumping on there and giving us a review. It helps move Addict to Athlete's message forward and get into the ears of those who truly need the help, whether it's addiction recovery, mental health awareness, or just team support. Addict to Athlete's podcast is here to help. Athletes, I am excited to talk to our guest today. I met him several weeks ago as I was being talked into throwing myself out of an airplane with Coach James Johnson of the Uinta Basin Addict to Athlete chapter. And when I met this gentleman and heard just a small section of his story, I was very intrigued and had convinced him to come onto the Addict to Athlete podcast, talk a little bit about his experience overcoming adversity. Today we're going to be talking to Shadrach Field. And Shadrach, you're a muggle, and so muggles are those who don't necessarily have an addiction, but you've overcome some major experiences in life that I think can be very inspirational, having had the same experiences with pain and frustration, sadness, depression, all those things that we all go through, yet you chose a more excellent way to cope with this. So Shadrach, would you mind sharing with the team a little bit about you? Maybe dive into your story a little bit. And then we'll pick it up where I met you as we were going to throw ourselves out of a perfectly good plane.
Okay, sounds good. So I guess a little bit about me and my family, kind of my upbringing, if you will. I'm one of three children. I'm the oldest. My little sister is Mackley, and she's married to a rodeo guy. They have a trucking company in North Dakota that they'd started with my dad. And then my little brother, Casey, he's a bareback rider. He's a big rodeo guy. He's actually a five-time world champion bareback rider, which is pretty cool. There's only two other guys that have ever won five world titles in his event. And it was back in the 70s. And so he's making a name for himself for sure in the rodeo world. And then my dad was also a five-time world champion. He was a two-time bareback world champion and a three-time all-around. So I guess you could say, you know, growing up, I was around it all the time. I was around, the best, really. I mean, my dad was the first cowboy to ever have $1 million in career earnings. So it was really cool growing up. You know, he was nothing but dad to me, but he just, you know, he was the man, but I said, he was nothing but dad to me. But being so, and his accomplishments, I just assumed or knew from a very young age that I mean, I thought I'd be a world champion. It never even came into my mind that I wouldn't be a world champion. It's all I knew. I just saw my dad do it, and it looked, you know. So I kind of was raised a little bit with that mentality. Like in my home, if my mom, probably the worst thing you could say in my home was "I can't."
Oh,
I mean, you could probably curse and get away with it a lot easier than saying "I can't."
That was very well known early on.
You didn't say that in my home.
Yes.
Perfect. Yeah. And we grew up kind of with the mentality and the attitude that you can literally do anything you want. My mom, probably even more than my dad, even though my dad was the world champion, but my mom was, she said, "You want to be an astronaut? Go be an astronaut. Whatever you want to be, you'll be that. Just be that." So she instilled in us at a very early age that, you know, mindset is everything. And if you think about yourself and what you think about yourself and what you say about yourself eventually will come to pass. So to be really careful with the things that you say and believe about yourself. But my dad, he died 4 years ago. He had pancreatic cancer, and it took him very quickly. It got him in about 6 months. So,
oh, wow.
That was a huge blow to our family. Yeah. He was quite the guy. He was a really special person. He's in the Utah Hall of Fame and the Utah Sports Hall of Fame and a few others around the country. So he's a really cool guy, but very, very humble. You would never know he was a five-time world champion. My brother, likewise, they're just put their blue jeans on every day and go to work kind of guys. That's real cool. Humble, neat people.
That's awesome. That is way cool. Yeah. So you learned from a real young age that that you had the humility, you had the respect, you had the can-do attitude. Even when things kind of probably went sideways, it was still like, dust yourself off, get back on, and do it again, and see what happens. And that sounds like it had a major like effect on all of you, you know, to kind of see things not as like impossible, but really kind of like inspire to become. And I love the fact that, you know, mindset is everything. Did you realize when mom was teaching that principle and dad was showing it and you guys were experiencing mindset as everything that you'd need that at a time in the near future?
No clue. I mean, it was just something that, you know, some kids are taught at a young age how to use computers. You know, right. I don't know. It was just something I never even realized that maybe my environment or how I was being raised. I had no idea that it was different from all my buddies and everybody else. I just assumed, you know, every family was that way. And you know, at a young, it was hard to know those things at that young of an age, but it really set me up, and my brother and my sister, it set us up for life, really. That's, you know, through other principles, you know, hard work, honesty, integrity, all those, the great principles that you're, you know, that were taught. But number one, probably for us, and I'm not saying it was mindset, was believing in something and knowing that you could accomplish something. That was probably the number one thing that was taught in my home.
Man, that to me is a huge principle. And listeners, that's the same with recovery. Mindset is everything before you even approach that starting line of wanting to change your life, because, you know, if you believe you can or you believe you can't, right? Henry Ford, you're right. So if you believe you can't, you won't. And if you believe you can, you will. Both of those things take time, but mindset is so crucial. I'm so glad you brought that up. I think that's a perfect title for today's podcast. But I really think that with that mindset of all I got to do is suit up and show up and give it everything I've got, outcomes are very possible and very likely. Self-doubt in the middle of a situation where you're trying to change your life, or you're trying to accomplish something difficult. Sometimes you got to take a knee, right, and just rethink things. I mean, sometimes self-doubt can come into play even when you have a mindset of it's possible. I think this is a huge principle, and I'm glad that we're touching base on this. Because if you will now, Shadrach, would you share a little bit about how that statement, that lesson, played into your life very significantly?
Sure. So just a second to back up. Like, you know, I always thought I'd be a world champion rodeo cowboy.
Right.
Obviously, that didn't happen. I compete professionally still at a much lower level. And my career path took a different route. So I got into, I oil filled and real estate and different things. I'm an entrepreneur at heart. I have a lot of ADD, so I'm all over the place. I've got businesses kind of all over the place. But it's a success mindset. It doesn't matter the event or the sport or the career path that I've taken. It's a mindset that will create success in whatever you do. But it really set me up for some of the trials I was going to face later in life, which have really come to pass the last year or so. And I can kind of dive into that. I've always been a guy that loved aviation. I went in a small plane when I was, for the first time when I was about 20, probably 22-ish, and just fell in love with aviation. I mean, from that minute on, all I could think about, I mean, if I was on the internet, it was looking at airplanes or reading airplane articles, or I just always had a huge desire to fly, and I loved it. So I worked on it a little bit back then, you know, 15 years ago, and then about 5 years after I started working on it, I'd done it a little bit and then quit. Done it a little bit and quit. I finally was like, you know what? I love this. I want to get my pilot's license, finish this up, and fly. So I went out and bought an airplane, and I thought that this is the best way to commit to the deal.
Yeah.
So Started working on my pilot's license, ended up getting my pilot's license. I loved it so much, but I always felt like I needed to be prepared for the worst. I mean, there was something in me that always said, be ready for some off airport action, if you will, in the mountains. I always knew that. Really? I would always tease about wanting to be to crash in the mountains and then try and survive naked, like Naked and Afraid. I know,
yeah, yeah.
Funny, but I love that show, and I was always, I want to do that, you know. And I would tease around. I'd tell my wife and other people. I'd say, hey, if I crash in the mountains, let me be for like 10 days, 15 days, if, you know. But obviously, we would never do that. But yeah,
just know, I'll come walking out with like a rabbit and a deer on each shoulder.
Oh yeah,
and I'll be fine.
Covered in filth, skinny as heck. Yeah, yeah. And that was kind of like, I don't know, it's weird. But with that being said, I always worked on, like, every summer I would work on something with aviation. Mm-hmm. One summer I went up to Alaska for some bush pilot training, all off airport stuff. Yeah. Which is something that I really believe, you know, possibly saved our lives. The next summer I did, I think like 30 hours of aerobatics. So I've always working on my skills as a pilot, whether it's studying charts and books and, you know, whatever it was, I always worked towards it.
Wow.
And little did I know that was going to be huge in my life.
Right.
I'll jump right into that day that it happened, if that's good with you.
Yeah, please.
Okay, so August 7th of 2020, last year, we had some friends out. And the night they came out, actually, the night before they came out was a Thursday night. And I competed in a CrossFit competition locally here. I'm not a great CrossFitter, but I really like to compete and I love CrossFit. So I compete in the county fair. I'd go to two or three competitions a year just kind of for fun.
Yeah.
But so I competed Thursday night, and then Friday morning we had some friends out from the city, and they're big YouTube stars. So they were vlogging or videoing pretty much everything.
Right.
And that morning they got there, and I said, do you guys want to go for a boat ride, or do you want to go check out the mountains in the airplane? We'll go. I can take you out and show you the UNOs a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, well, we want to do both. I said, well, let's go fly first while it's earlier in the morning and it's nice and calm outside. And then when we get back, we'll go for a boat ride.
Nice.
And so they showed up, and we loaded up in the plane and we took off. Actually, there were some pretty cool things that were said in the hangar before we left.
Really?
Betsy, she said, you promise that you won't crash us, because they're pretty nervous to go. They haven't been in little airplanes a whole lot. And I said, you know what? I can't promise you that, but I promise you I'll take care of you.
Wow.
And that's all recorded. They have all this.
And that seems like such common jargon, right?
Sure.
I
mean, yeah.
I heard that tossed around a million and one times when we were there to skydive, and hearing that, you know, it'll never happen, but you do. It's common, but it was very unique at that time for you guys.
Yeah, for sure. And I'm a type of guy, like, in fact, I kind of have a little routine. So I check the airplane out. Everything's good. We go to the end of the runway, and I usually, in the run-up area where you kind of run your plane up to make sure everything's good before you take the runway, I would always usually say a little prayer right there. Mm-hmm. And then a lot of times, even if I didn't say a prayer, when I'm in my pre-flight and taxiing and getting ready to take off, I always paid attention really closely to how I felt. Mm-hmm. And if I ever felt like, hey, don't go today, I wouldn't go. And that day I felt nothing. There was no feelings of, hey, it could be bad today, don't go. You know, there was nothing like that. So it was just a typical, you know, normal day for us to take off and fly. And we got on the end of the runway, we took off, and we went up to King's Peak. I don't know if you're familiar with King's Peak, but it's the highest point in Utah. It's around 13,000 feet, 13.3 or 4 or 5. I don't know for sure, but we went up to King's Peak and we flew around for a second. We decided, all right, we'd kind of seen enough. We were ready to head back. And we got, 5-7 miles or so north of Moon Lake. And we were going to head down over Moon Lake. And that's a little bit west of Roosevelt, and circle back to Roosevelt. Well, when I started down the canyon towards the lake, a big gust of wind come and hit us right kind of head on, and which is no big deal. I just slowly eased the throttle in a little bit, because as I started to descend, we were, like I said, 13.5. And so to descend down to 5,000 that close, I had to put some flaps in, and I wanted them to be able to see the scenery. So I actually put my landing gear down to slow me down a little bit more so I could get down over the lake and show them Moon Lake.
Oh, wow.
So I had half of my flaps in and the landing gear down when I started to put the throttle in, and there was no response. I pushed it all the way to the firewall and nothing.
Nothing.
And you'll have to excuse me. It's still
You're
a little
fine.
Bit. I get a little emotional telling the
yeah.
story. I push the throttle in, nothing. So I start working the throttle and there's nothing. There's no checklist. If your engine is still running, it's still idling,
yeah.
but it won't produce any power. So, I mean, I tried everything I could think of and just couldn't get any power. Immediately after I realized there was no power, I put my gear back up and put my flaps up. I needed to get across that lake. There was no way. I mean, if I don't make it across the lake, we die.
Right.
No question. There's nowhere on the sides of the lake, in the canyon to the north of where we're coming from, is nothing but just straight up and down cliff walls. I mean, we're in a situation where at this point we have to make it across the lake.
Right. Are you kind of descending down? I mean, speed wise, I mean, you clipping along or?
Normally you would be, yeah, but with no power and I had had my flaps and my gear and I was trying to go slow.
Right.
Because we were, you know, we were descending very quickly. So I was, you know, I didn't want to get going too fast. At that point we were probably doing 160 miles an hour at that point. Once I knew that we had made it across the lake, I put my gear back down and my flaps back down. There was a road just above the lake that I was actually trying to get to, and we weren't going to make that. So I had two options. It was either land on the beach, or there was a big sagebrush flat up above the beach that looked pretty good. I wanted to go to the beach. I kind of had that thought in my mind from the beginning.
Right.
But I kept on having a feeling come across me, do not go to the beach. I mean, it was very, very strong. I kept thinking, you will kill the boys in the back. So there was me and Gentry in the front seats and my wife and his wife in the middle two seats. And then the back two seats was their twin boys that were 16 years old.
Okay.
And I just, like I said, I just kept getting the thought, you'll kill them. I kept thinking, if I land on the beach, it's going to endo and kill those boys. Well, as we got closer to the beach, there were people all over the beach. And
oh, wow.
I can't control at that point. I can control left or right, but no, nothing else. So
right.
The beach was out. So I was going to go to the sagebrush flat. I lined up for the sagebrush flat. We were kind of set up to land there and got a little bit slow. And then one of the rudder pedals was pushed a little bit out of kind of bracing. And it turned the plane. We lost a lot of speed. I tried to nose it over really quick. Anyway, we ended up coming pretty much straight down from 75 feet because we didn't slide very far. That's where it got pretty difficult.
Yeah, I can imagine. There's probably so much going on in your head. Yet being aware enough to make those decisions, Shadrach, that blows my mind. And in the middle of crisis, and in the middle of of all these things that you can and can't control, to be open-minded enough to not just make decisions, but to listen. And, you know, we talk about spirituality quite a bit on Team Addict to Athlete. We really do. It's a part of recovery. It's a part of all of us. I can only imagine that was kind of your experience as well, of like, you know, you can't land on the beach. But you're like, but that's where I want to go. And it's like, no, you can't. All these things going on, like, it has to be overwhelming at the same time, like terrifying at the same time, like powerful. I mean, I can't imagine, like, in that small amount of time, how much of everything you experienced. Does that make sense? Like, just how much of absolutely everything came through you?
Yeah, I mean, we from the time I lost engine power, we figure it was like 7 or 8 minutes till we hit the ground. So there was 7 or 8 minutes there of You know, when I watch the video back, because like I said, you can go watch all of this on YouTube. They video the whole thing on their YouTube channel. It's on my YouTube channel. I mean, right up till impact. Mm-hmm. And you can see I was calm. I was it to watch the video back. Mm-hmm. I can't hardly do it. I mean, right. It freaks me out. Scary as hell. The sounds, yeah. the visual part of it, to relive it is terrifying.
Right.
But the actual moment, I wasn't scared. I figured we'd land on that road. I'd land on the Sagebrush Flat, the beach. I mean, I did not fear. I told them it's going to be hard. Right before we hit, I say it's going to be hard. And yeah. it's funny because I, you know, obviously at the time I meant the landing, but
no,
you know, looking at it.
See, so many profound moments like that. And I was going to ask you, if you don't mind me asking, when did you let everybody know that there's something not quite right here? Everybody just everyone be calm. But how did you?
Yeah. So you'll see.
Cause you watch these movies of the pilot in the jumbo plane. And he's like, nothing to be concerned about. Please put your trays, you know, all this stuff. But like for you, it's very intimate too, Shadrach. I mean, when did you let them know that there's a problem?
So as soon as I was pushing that throttle and there was no power, mm-hmm. I told them, I said, hey, something's wrong. And my wife started punching me. she thought I was messing with everybody. She's like, knock it off, and kind of hit me from the back seat. I said, no, I'm serious. Something's wrong. I can't get any power. And then that's when, but I think that as calm as I stayed, everybody was calm.
Yeah.
I mean,
because you were
really have to watch the video. It was, it was really almost peaceful. It wasn't like, you know, you imagine an airplane crash and losing power for 5 or 6 minutes before you hit ground, you would think everybody's going to be screaming and falling out of the sky. And it was nothing like that. It was really calm, and it wasn't that scary.
Because you were, Shadrach, because you were. And I love that, because man, you're going to make me emotional because of mindset is everything, right? I mean, if you would have went nuts, I'm sure they would have had a horrible experience. But because you composed yourself enough to say, mindset is everything, this is what's going to happen, this is where we're going, that to me is even like on a huge spectrum, like emotionally and spiritually powerful, because you were that mindset. Man, I can't even comprehend that. But everyone was okay. We're literally behind you.
Yeah.
Wow.
Thank you. Yeah, it was crazy. You know, once we'd hit the ground, I woke up and immediately all I could think of was fire. We're gonna burn. Yeah. And so the second I came to, I couldn't have been out for more than 20 seconds or so, because everybody was still in the airplane when I woke up. Mm-hmm. I immediately shut the power off and shut the fuel selector valve off to make sure there was no fuel. Then I hadn't even really kind of assessed where I was personally yet. And about the time that I got the power off and the electrical off is when I realized I was paralyzed. Uh-huh. I couldn't feel my legs. I couldn't move anything from the waist down. Mm-hmm. It still hadn't set in that I wasn't scared of that yet at all.
Right.
I started telling people, get out of the plane, get out of the plane. I was slunched over to the right seat. Gentry was hanging upside down out of the plane. He had fallen out, but his legs were all broken into pieces, and they looked like snakes wrapped around the pedals.
Wow.
His face was smashed pretty bad. He had blood covered his face. He was hanging upside down. His eyes were open, and he was unconscious, and I thought he was gone.
Right.
That was really hard.
Yeah.
As a pilot, you feel responsible, regardless of how well or not that I did as a pilot.
Yeah.
Up till that point, I felt the responsibility of my, you know, my passengers.
Absolutely.
And I thought he was gone. My wife's arm was mangled. She was knocked out, but she had come to at this point. Everybody was able to get out of the plane except for me and Gentry. I started yelling at him to get Gentry out first.
Right.
Just because his legs and everything, and I was thinking of fires. I wanted him out.
Right.
So I made sure that he had gotten out. Enough people had showed up at that time, which is another miracle. Mm-hmm. There was like three first responders, mm-hmm. actual first responders, EMT, paramedics, highway patrolmen,
Really?
on location up in the mountains in a remote area. They were within 10 minutes of us crashing. They were there. They were there camping. They were there visiting the lake. Just happened to be there that day.
My
Had they not
gosh.
been there, Gentry would have died. And I don't know how much worse off I would have been, because the way that they extracted me from the plane, that they got me stabilized on the ground, Gentry as well. There's no phone service up there at
Oh,
all.
yeah.
So someone had to haul butt back to the lodge and call 911. I mean, we were a good hour and 45 minutes or so. I was an hour and 45 minutes before I was in an ambulance. I think he was out of there in about an hour, in a
Good
helicopter.
grief. I mean, you look at that too. I mean, again, you hear this from time to time where people are in the right place at the right time. And I'm a firm believer that nothing happens by coincidence. It all happens on purpose. Again, that blows my mind, because if you would have tried to go anywhere else, it could have been a delay. It could have been longer. It could have been more difficult. So, just being aware and putting it literally in God's hands, I think is something that we all need to do in life. Just not when it's these kind of teaching moments, right? It's like, hey, try this when life is good and see what happens, because man, this stuff right here, this is powerful.
Well, I mean,
So
along those lines,
please.
that's something I learned is, a thought came to me when I was laying in the hospital that, what happened? What? Why me? Why this? Why the situation? But what happened? And a thought came to me that altitude, when you're flying, is the same as your relationship to God. I mean, if your relationship to God is close and good, it's the same as having a ton of altitude. When had I been at 13,500 feet at when I lost my power and hadn't slowed down and started to descend and get lower so that we could see the pretty, the scenery, had I been up higher and maintained that altitude, then when the engine failure came, I would have had so many options. I could have got to any highway. I could have got to any airport. I could have, it would have been easy. It would have been nothing. But because I had almost gotten complacent, and was I doing anything illegal? Absolutely not. Was it the safest thing to do? No. Getting down that low over that lake with no options for when you have engine failure, that's not smart. And I knew that. I mean, I had these thoughts a million times, and so was I complacent that day? I'm sure, a little bit. Even though it wasn't illegal and I'd done it 100 times, I had buzzed over that lake literally 100 times. I loved it. It was so fun to scare all the people out on canoes.
I
I'd
love
cruise
it.
across that lake smoking, So, but when you don't have that relationship with your Heavenly Father, or that altitude, if you will, when turbulence comes in your life, which it will,
Which it will.
regardless of who you are or what you have going or how spiritual you are or not spiritual, you will have engine failure in life. You will have times where there's turbulence. And you need that altitude. You need that relationship with God, because it's never too late, but it sure helps. It makes these trials and these things we go through, it gives you options. It makes it so much easier. So I had those thoughts come to me while I was laying in the hospital, and they've came into, they came to play throughout the recovery process a ton. But I know we're kind of limited on time,
No,
so I don't want to miss
you're
it.
fine. Please go.
Okay, so anyway, we wake up there. Gentry's gone. Jaslyn and I are in the ambulance. We're on the way to the hospital. They run out of pain, so they pick me up. They get me on an IV, and Jaslyn, we're in the same ambulance, and they get us on some IVs, which is amazing. I didn't realize how bad I was hurting until they took the pain away. We didn't make it 10 minutes, and they ran out of pain medication. And oh my gosh, her and I both, it started to come back about the same time for both of us. And we then, after having the pain taken away, being totally relaxed in on stretchers in there, and then having that pain come back was excruciating. It was
Oh man.
very, very hard. It made the next 45 minutes to the hospital not very fun.
Good grief.
But we got there. They got us our pain medication. I was life flighted an hour later after they got me stabilized to Provo, and Jaslyn was released. She had a surgery on her arm. They put pins and a plate and everything in it. I made it to Provo, and the next morning I had my back surgery, and I got T12 was a burst fracture on me, which slid forward and hit my spinal cord on the cauda equina. It's the horse end, the very bottom part of
Right.
your spinal cord.
Okay.
That part of your spinal cord, those nerves go down the back of your leg. So my butt cheeks, hamstrings, calves, all the way down the back, and then over the top of my feet. And my so I had no feeling. I had some feeling at that point. Some feeling had come back in the front of my legs. I could feel them perfectly, and they worked fine. But nothing worked down the back, and there was complete numbness from the waist down on the backside,
Wow.
and then in the front in my groin area. So, no bowel and bladder function. That part still hasn't come back. It's been 10 months.
Right.
I do have some sensation that's come back in the skin on my calves. And my feet are starting to come back a little bit as far as feeling goes, but I still can't move like my toes, or like I can't push with my feet at all. So I have to wear braces that start about my knees down.
That's the first thing I noticed when I met you was you had those,
Yeah.
and I thought, man, those look like some interesting, like contraptions. I'm thinking that maybe it was something for like sports related or something. But
Yeah.
you, I watched you jump out of your pickup and walk over. I would have never guessed that for a time period you were literally paralyzed, Shadrach. That blows my mind.
Yeah, well, I still, I mean, I can't feel my hamstrings and calves and glutes don't work. My calves don't work at all. Hamstrings and glutes work very little, but still, I've just kind of adapted to, I kind of walk on my heels a little bit and balance on my heels. I mean, I'm hitting the gym. That's how I actually met James
James.
and some of your athletes is through the gym, which has been incredible for me because, I was at the gym, so I got through my process at the hospital. They sent me home. While I was in the hospital, actually, I said I was so excited. I was like, let's see what I can do. I thought I had all these thoughts of, I'm gonna go to the Special Olympics. I'm gonna be this
Yeah.
great athlete in a wheelchair, and I'm gonna do all these cool things. I was seriously like, I wasn't even that bummed.
Yeah.
But that's not because I'm anything special. That's because at that point, I didn't realize what it was going to be. You
Right.
see somebody in a wheelchair or that doesn't walk that great, and you think, oh, wow, they're in a wheelchair or they don't walk that great. You don't see what lies beneath that is the actual struggle. Walking
Right.
different or the physical struggles I have, they're okay. They're hard, but it is what it is. I'm okay with it. There's only a couple ways to look at it, literally, too, right? I can
Yeah.
either be positive about it, look at it, or I can be sad about it. So that part of it's not that bad. It's the emotional part that's been a really, really a booger, where
That's been the challenge.
depression stuff comes in, when everything about who I thought I was has now become very difficult physically. And so it weighs on you emotionally, and that's been the toughest part of this journey for sure.
Did the doctor, what did he say about walking with you? Was he optimistic? Did you kind of take his advice, or did you say, "Well, thanks for the doctor's advice, doc, but you said this,
Oh
I'm walking out of here."
yeah.
Like,
Yeah.
what did he say about walking with you? What'd the doc say?
They were really good to not give me anything discouraging.
Okay, good.
But they were also very sure not to give me too much hope. They
Right.
definitely said, we don't know what'll come back, when it'll come back, if anything will come back. And I said, I'm going to walk out of here. It's okay. It's good. And they actually got me on my feet about 3 hours after surgery. There are three of them holding me up, but I was able to make the movement kind of to walk. And about a week in or 10 days in, I walked for the first time on my own on the parallel bars, and my physical therapist. And again, I don't say these things to boast or to
No.
be, but yeah, they couldn't believe it.
Yeah.
They couldn't believe that I was walking. And I left the hospital with a walker. At my 3 month checkup, I was on forearm crutches about 3 months before they said I should be.
Wow.
And then at my 6 month checkup, I walked in with nothing.
They
I
were probably blown
my
away.
yeah they couldn't believe it. It was pretty cool. And again, a lot of that is hard work and mentality, but a lot of it is some blessings that I received as well.
For sure. How did the rest of your crew go? How did the rest of the friends and family?
So Gentry was behind me for quite some time because he had so much more damage. His legs, I don't know. I think femur, tibia, neck, back in the exact same spot as mine. His face was shattered pretty bad, but luckily he didn't get his spinal cord quite as badly as me. He has bowel and bladder function, and a lot of his stuff is coming back pretty good. He's still struggling and having to work through a lot as well.
Right.
But now that his legs, everything's kind of healed up, he's doing really well.
That's cool.
Yeah, he's doing good. So, Jaslyn, she has some major PTSD struggles now. Mm-hmm. She, little sounds and little things. She still has nightmares. We've had to fly a couple times since then in a commercial plane, and that was extremely difficult for her. So she's struggled. Betsy does really well, but she's had some PTSD stuff as well. The boys, they've done really, really good. They, that I'm aware of, very little PTSD, and physically they're doing really good.
That's amazing, because the way you described that crash, all of you survived. Different ailments, different issues, different situations, but you all survived. Shadrach, that's very rare, as you know, in those situations, to have everyone kind of get through that experience. Did you, after that, did you ever think about just quitting flying, being giving up the ghost for the pilot? I mean, did you feel like...
Actually, no.
Yeah.
Everybody else, I don't think anybody else is probably going to get in a little plane ever again, but that I did and jumped out.
I don't want to touch base on that. Yeah. Okay. Because my thing is, this is the second time Coach Johnson has done this. And last year, I was very hell bent on not doing it because I'm like, man, I don't know. Like, it's just one of those things where it's like, I just don't feel the urge, And, yeah. I did all the filming and all the videotaping and stuff. This year was a little bit different. And when he approached me this time and said he didn't have a partner, I was still like, I don't care if you don't have a partner. You can go alone, man. Yeah. But one of my athletes said to me, he says, Coach, what are you really afraid of? And I had to like sit there in front of two guys. I don't want to be that guy who wusses out. But I thought, I don't really have a good answer for this question. So what am I afraid of? And the answer is, well, I'm not afraid of anything. So why am I holding back? And so that's what got me on that plane was when Rob asked me, what are you really afraid of? Yeah. Right after that conversation is when I met you, which was kind of interesting. And when you walked away, James leaned over to me and says, see that guy over there? He's not an addict, but you know what he does have? And he told me about your story just briefly. And I was like, what in the flip is that guy doing here? It's not even a year ago this happened. And he's going to get in this small, recreate all this, except this time jump out. I want to know, and I want the listeners to really get to understand this, and you've had some time to process this now. What in the world was that choice? Because that's the last thing most people think. Because then when you told me you were paralyzed, you had that problem, I'm like, the dude's going to jump out of a plane and possibly re-injure himself, because even landing can be a little rough. So walk me through your mindset of like James inviting you all the way up to when your feet touch the ground again.
All right, so a couple things with that. When I was working out, trying to recover, I met a bunch of athletes, and I met some other guys that were coming, addict athlete guys, to the gym. And it was funny because some of them were, so this is in part for where I'm going with why I did it. Mm-hmm. Some of those guys, when I first was at the workout class, because I'm sitting there watching this workout class and they're doing burpees and all these things, and I'm like, man, I wish I could do that again. I would do anything. I said piss on this. I said, I can do a burpee still. I'll figure out how to do it, right? So I go in there, and that day we did 180 burpees, my first time. And there was about three of the guys that were kind of sitting on the sidelines, if you will, and weren't jumping in. They were just in jeans, and they all had an excuse,
right?
They had a bad shoulder, a bad back. Well, by the end of that class, they were all on the floor dying with me. They were sweating, giving it all. And I got to talk to them a little bit, and I ended up working out with those guys for the next 6 weeks or so. I got to know them a little bit, and so they got to see me push through and work hard when something's very difficult. Well, those same guys were there at the jump and going to do the jump, And I felt something that I needed to do it for them, partly, on top of what for me. Right. It's almost like I don't feel like I'm anything special, but I needed to be an example. They got to see me work mm-hmm. out. They need to see me get back on the horse, if you will.
Yes.
And like I said, I was always kind of raised that way. You get bucked off, you get back on.
Exactly.
And it wasn't that I don't have a fear of flying again. And I didn't know why I felt this desire to jump out of an airplane, because honestly, I never really felt that desire before the crash.
Yeah.
But it was kind of like, for me, I needed a fresh start to my aviation life, if you will. I love to fly. I love to do all those things, and I don't want to be afraid of it. So what better way? This is my mentality leading up to it. What better way than jump out of the airplane and skydive to get over that, whatever fear might be left over? Because I really couldn't tell you. I didn't think there was any fear. Shoot, when I got in that little tiny airplane, five of us in a four-seater, I thought that I would have a lot of feelings come back and a lot of fear. And until they opened the door and I climbed out on the landing gear to jump out,
yeah,
there was no fear. And then when that door opened and you climb out on that landing gear, I was like,
uh-huh.
Oh boy, it's
this is very now. Real.
Yeah, and I jumped, and I was able to jump, and it was just amazing. And then I was able to land on my feet, and James actually said, "Hey, wait a second." He said, "Hold on, come here. You just landed on your feet.
Mm-hmm.
Last time you were in a small airplane, you crashed."
Yeah.
You know, that's why I jumped. I didn't know.
Yeah, man.
I didn't know it at the time, but that landing back on my feet. And I think that's huge. I mean, any trial that we go through, anything, if we fight through it, we have the right mentality, we do one more rep, we finish the chore, we get done with it, we beat it, you can land on your feet.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. Regardless of what you've been through, you can land on your feet and it'll be okay.
That blows my mind, because getting in that, like you said, that little plane, like the jumping for me wasn't hard, man. It was the plane ride up there. I'm like, this thing's bouncing and jumping around. And I got thinking about you. I'm like, dude, this must have been like insane for him. But to hear that wasn't a big deal, because holy crap, man, that plane ride up, come on. Like,
yeah, James, people ask me, is that not scary? Or are you not scared to do that or this? And do you not have PTSD? I think I'm too dumb to know better.
I love it.
I don't know what else. You just kind of got to get to a point where you're like, I survived a plane crash.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, so what? Life is what it is. If I was supposed to go, I was going to go. If my chute's not going to open, it's not going to. When it's my time, you know, President Gordon B. Hinckley of the mm-hmm. of the church, you know, the LDS church, he said, "No unworthy man will ever die before his time."
Yeah.
So if I'm living my life the way I'm supposed to be, I don't have anything to worry about.
Nothing to worry about. Nothing. See, I love that mindset, brother. I love it in so many different ways, because there was so much going on that day, you know, for you, for everybody, but to be immersed in it and to see other people's anxiety, but then to hear, you know, your story. And when I was approached with the question, "What are you really afraid of?" We got to answer some of these questions. Like, so curious, when you committed to do it and you told your family, because you jumped with your brother-in-law. I got to meet your brother-in-law. Is that right? Yeah. And yeah. I asked you this question on the video that we're putting together. I said, what did your family think of you doing this then? You know, because I'd known that your wife was with you during the accident. Share with us, because I don't know the other side of this, when you got home and spoke about it. So what did she think? What did they think when you're like, "Well, I'm going to go do this"? And then what happened afterwards when you came back and did the return and report?
I didn't tell all of my family.
Wise.
But my wife, she knows me so well that she was like, "Why am I not surprised?"
Yeah.
Like, I'm kind of an adrenaline junkie anyway, and like that kind of stuff. She didn't like it, and she had some moments. You know, she knew for 2 months before I was gonna jump out, mm-hmm. and so over those 2 months, she had some moments that she was like, "I wish you wouldn't do that," or "I'm scared," or, And I would have respected that of her 100% had it got to that day of or day before, whatever, and she was seriously not wanting me to, I would have absolutely, for her sanity, not done it, because it wasn't that huge a deal for me. But she was okay with it. And I think that she realized what it would mean to me and how important it was to me to get back in and get back on and go through it. Because nobody put up a fight about it, but they were like, okay, you're crazy, you know?
Yeah.
That was their mentality of it. But nobody tried to stop me or anything. So it was okay. They couldn't believe it. I can tell you that. And they were excited for me after, you know, I think everybody was able to look at it in a sense that, yes, it needed to happen. It's good for him to get that over with, to be over that part of it. And so they were really good with it.
So then from your perspective, brother, what do you teach people about overcoming fear? Because this is a big thing. Even with people in recovery, there's always this weird kind of sense of fear. Fear to be without. Fear to have to cope with life on life's terms. You know, a fear of like what they might lose, not knowing, you know, what they'll gain. Maybe even fear of what they'll gain. What do you know now, literally, about fear? Because you've experienced it many times throughout life and throughout this last year. What is your mindset on overcoming that?
So that's interesting that you asked that, because I actually just had this conversation yesterday. You know, fear is a huge cripple. It can cripple you. And I think that, you know, for me, I have to step back and I help other people step back and say, okay, what are you scared of, first off? Next, do you really need to be scared of that? Then where does the fear come from? And to me, fear is Satan's biggest tool.
Oh, yeah.
The fear of the... I think that he can work on us. Satan can get in with fear. He knows you're afraid of something, and then he amplifies it. He finds ways to make you scared of things that aren't even real. So many times with anxiety and depression and mental health things, it all stems from fear.
Yeah.
You know, being afraid of like, I know that when I get some anxiety or depression going, it's due to being afraid of things that aren't even happening. Like, right. Scared that my business is going to fail, scared that I'm not enough, scared that I'm not being a good father or a good friend. Being scared of those things causes you to have anxiety and depression and you know, I hate fear. So how do we beat fear? I don't know. I think it's facing those fears, figuring out what you're scared of, and then running into it head on.
Yeah.
You know, whether it's, if you're scared of flying, jump out of an airplane. You know, I don't know all the ways to beat fear, but I think fear comes from Satan.
Yeah.
So if that's the case, how do we battle it? We got to battle it with our Savior.
Yeah.
You know, through prayer, meditation, recognizing our Savior's hand in our life.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the ways that I deal with fear and that I would suggest that other people deal with fear.
See, then maybe I'll give you a little antidote for that, because I'm with you 100%. And what you just described is having faith in something. Faith and fear are the exact same thing when you boil them down, with very different outcomes, right? So what you've just described, I talked to the athletes a lot about replace your fear with faith. It's the same flipping thing, right? It's something you can't see that's giving you these emotions. So why not default to something positive instead of something negative? You had every right and every I guess, like opportunity to default into fear, but you chose faith instead. You chose faith in James. You chose faith in the pilot of that plane. You chose faith in the guy who's strapped to the back of you. Like, all these things you applied faith in. You know, when you were coming down across the lake, you applied faith, you know, in your skills and what you've learned and who's ultimately in control and the doctors. I don't think we truly conceptualize how important believing in something we can't see instead of fearing something that might be is it truly is in our lives. What do you think, brother?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think you're 100% spot on. Faith is the thing that can beat fear. And I think that, to take that a step further is, I think that the second you, like, I had this conversation with my wife yesterday because since the accident, she'd been scared of everything. Everything scares her. And we had this conversation, and I said, I think that you have to beat that fear quick. You can't let it set in. You can't let it get into you and have that seed planted. So the second you feel those thoughts, that fear sneaking in, you have to combat it with something quickly. And I think that that's where people screw up. Yet they try and combat it with these things that we're talking about after that fear has already done so much damage. So moving forward, as people hear this, I think that
I
you
love it.
gotta very quickly head that off. So the second you feel that fear come in, you gotta replace it with something. Replace. That's why I love the skydive deal. But I mean, replace your thoughts quickly with a positive. Instead of, oh, my kid's gonna get in a car wreck today, just because you're scared and paranoid of everything today. Think, my kid's wearing a seatbelt. I've taught him well enough to be aware at the intersections. Replace those scary thoughts with some positive thoughts. Make them up. Hell, they don't even gotta be
That's what
true.
you're doing with fear, right? You're making those up.
Exactly.
Make something else up.
Exactly. So let's make something up that's positive, because we hear it all the time that you are what you think you are. You become what you believe you're going to become. So with our thoughts, if we know we're a scared person or that fear damages us, the second that fear comes in, let's intercept it quickly with some positive.
I love it. That is genius. Literally, like erase and replace what we talk about so much on the team. You are spot on, because you're right. All anxiety is that prolonged fear, and it turns into this reality-based thing of like now it is, but it's not. It doesn't have to be. And listeners, I hope you're getting something from what Shadrach's talking about. The quicker you can get that fear back into the ring and start swinging on it, the faster you're going to be able to replace it with something of faith. And I love that mindset. I've never thought of it that way, but it's true. It's all made up anyway. We make up all of these things, and shoot, if it's a once in a million time chance that fear does come through, well, then you just take that head on. Because when you guys were in that hangar and the comment of, just don't do anything to make us crash came through, that was a little bit of fear coming through. And replacing it with some faith. Shadrach, that it blows my mind. So I know, yeah, we are kind of getting close on time, but I want this thought from you. Now, having seen the team Addict to Athlete, now kind of being immersed with people that struggle, because I'm a firm believer that when people get into addiction, they do that because to a certain degree, fear wins. And it's the pain, it's the fear of I'm going to hurt, and I don't want to hurt anymore. And so therefore, I'm going to take whatever this is to numb the pain. There was an interesting thing you said about your ambulance drive running out of that medication. What did you learn about pain throughout this whole process? Because to me, I'm thinking most people are afraid of that. That's what they're fearful of,
So
is hurting.
I actually have something I wrote down here about pain.
Awesome.
Let me see if I can
Because
find
to
it
me,
here.
that's one of the biggest struggles, and listeners, pay particular attention to this, because when we're in a constant state of trying to avoid it, that's why, we go to our pharmacy, Walmart pharmacy, and see maximum strength Tylenol, extra strength Bear. It's like we want pain gone now, but we learn something from it. Please share with what you thought.
So it's funny that you asked me specifically about pain, because I actually just wrote this in my notes about
Awesome.
pain, and it's thoughts I had
Nice.
come to me. So, and I don't even know if I wrote it good, and I don't even actually remember what I wrote for sure. But it says, sometimes I try to turn around the thoughts of pain as, okay, this has to be for a time, so let's do it. Let's go through it, knowing that if I get through it, I'm making progress towards a day with no pain. It will come at some point. Embrace the pain and struggle, knowing it is the path to recovery, and builds character and strengthens me mentally, emotionally, and physically. This the pain is what the pain is my motivation to get better. The pain
Absolutely.
is like, okay, I know this hurts. There is no way around it. It is going to hurt. But let's see, what is that doing for me? It's creating some strength, some inner strength, some mental strength, some physical strength. It's making me strong. So bring it on.
Bring it on.
Give me that pain. It's all about, I mean, you get used to the pain, for one thing. I live with pain every day. My feet and my butt, I have nerve pain in my, that's very excruciating at some times. Mm-hmm. But I've learned, it's okay. Like, the pain isn't, it does, okay, I don't want to sound fake, because pain, it sucks. And it causes me to be edgy with my family. There's a lot of negative associated with that pain.
Yes.
So I'm not just like, hell yeah, hurt me. Let's go. I want some more pain.
Yeah.
I hate the pain, but it's okay. It's okay.
Man.
It's going to make me a better person and a stronger person if I let it. So, so I'm not saying bring it on. I want more pain, but the pain that I'm going to suffer and that's right here in front of me, it's okay.
It's okay.
I'll get through it. I don't need to avoid the pain. I can get through the pain and let it make me something. Let me see what this pain does to me.
Yeah.
It's, you know.
Yeah.
I'm not going to let it affect me negatively. I will not. I'm going to try my hardest to become a better person and less short with my family. I have to apologize to my wife once a week and say, hey, I'm sorry. I know I've been short with you this last week. I'm sorry. I've been short with our kids and I'm working on it.
Yeah.
But that's part of what it's doing for me, right? That's the positive. It's making me have to work through some things to get some more patience, to become a better husband and a better father. So thank you, pain.
Makes you if aware. Thank you, pain. Wow. You don't hear that very often, brother.
If I can be a better, more patient, loving father when I'm in pain, what happens to that day when I don't have pain anymore? I'll be a killer father. Yeah. I'll be an amazing husband, right? Yeah. So if I can be a good husband and a good father and a good person through this pain, watch me when the pain's gone.
See, listeners, you're giving pure gold here, because what Shadrach's talking about, it runs through every walk of life. Addict, non-addict, you know, rich, poor, what he's talking about is true principle for not just recovery, but for life, because we're going to hurt. I mean, none of us get out of this alive anyway. It's going to hurt.
No, we're all going to have turbulence and engine failure.
This is so true, man. Shadrach, you have no idea how powerful this truly is. And maybe you do, but for us, us who invite, you know, the muggles on the team, everyone has a story. Everyone does. You have every reason to be a world-class addict, but you chose to be a world-class citizen, a world-class man. And it started with a little imprint way back then of mindset is everything. I am so glad that you mentioned that, because to sum all this up, that's what it is, isn't it? I mean, now looking back at that principle from what dad taught you, mom taught you, your siblings all did, mindset is absolutely everything, wouldn't you say?
Oh, everything. I mean, every trial, every opportunity, every blessing, everything that you're approached with in life, to me, literally, there's a left and a right.
Yeah.
You can go one direction or the other with your trials, with your blessings, with everything you're given in life. You can approach it and say, I can approach it this way, which is head on, strong, fast, hard, make me tough, or I can go left and I can be a victim.
Yes.
And before me, I'm dealt with this. I have to, you know, use a catheter every 3 hours, and I have to go poop with a rubber glove in the mornings. You know, mm-hmm. I can't rope as good as I used to. I can't go hunt. All these things that I used to love to do, I can let those affect me and be poor me and sad. And hey, there's days I do. Yeah. There's a lot of days where I get down on myself and I struggle. I am not perfect in this process. Mm-hmm. But there's two ways to look at every situation in life, and it's left or right. And I want to take things head on and let them form me into a better me.
Yeah.
Now, I like I said, I'm not trying to, I don't want anybody to ever look at me and think, oh, he's got it all figured out, or I'm in the trenches, bud. I'm in the trenches with like everybody else.
Yeah.
But that's the mentality I have to take and that I work towards taking.
Yeah.
I said, I don't always make the right decision and take that right hand turn.
Right.
There's times where I get down on myself, but I know that that right hand turn is the right one. And I try to make that turn.
Well, yeah, because the cool thing about what you're saying is when you make that decision, you're going to own it, negative or positive. Exactly. And listeners, you know, brother, I could probably go on for another 4 or 5 hours with you. You got some powerful stuff in there, and it's true, you know. And it's not because you're looking at, you know, like, I got it all figured out. It's what these listeners are going to hear is that if he can do it, maybe I can do it. You know, that's in the plane crash of my addiction, maybe if he can do it, I can do it. And that's where this is really about. I mean, there's no way I could not have gotten on that plane after hearing what you went through. I'm thinking, all these guys, we have the same story. But when I heard your story, I'm like, well, now I'm really screwed. I've got to jump out of this plane, because if this man's doing it, I can do it too. And so to a certain degree, I didn't know you, but I trusted you enough to say, well, if you trust this plane, then I'm going to trust this plane. Because when we landed, James is like, yeah, I saw this little like tag in the back of the plane that said it was from 1958. I'm like, dude, what? That plane's that old and we got in it? But we made it, man. We had the experience.
Yes,
Shadrach, thank you so much for being a guest on this podcast. I appreciate it more than you'll know, and I think the athletes will. I want to thank Radio Ronin for the Radio Ronin Network hosting Addict to Athletes podcast. Please check out the Radio Ronin Network. We've got lots of good podcasts out there for you, so check out those as well. Listeners, you've been well fed. Shadrach, do you have social media? Is there anything that you do?
I was going to say that if anybody wants to follow along, we have a YouTube channel. I post quite a bit of stuff on the YouTube channel. I'm doing some public speaking now, and I just did an event Friday. I'm about to upload that video towards the end of this week, and it's a great one. My Instagram, just Shadfield, F-E-I-L-D on the last name. Awesome. That'll be a great place. I try to post a lot on there of my recovery, my journey, my public speaking events, and try to keep it, you know, as motivational as I can. And wow. So yeah, that's the best place to find me is probably my Instagram and then some YouTube stuff too. So
awesome. So listeners, check the link below. We'll go ahead and post that with these podcasts and our YouTube videos, so you guys can get connected with Shadrach, because there's some amazing stuff to come too, because you're still kind of in that beginning stage of awareness. So I can't wait to see what else you learn from this. So listeners, again, thank you so much for being part of Addict Athletes podcast. Share, subscribe, get this into the ears of anybody who needs it, and keep this one in the chamber on repeat, because there's a lot of powerful principle here. Until next time, go turn that mess into a message.
Thank you.